At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
People could learn from each other's experience. That's perhaps for the future. But there are associations, and they do learn about each other.
Let's turn to the thinking behind all of these schools, independently or together. Really Good Schools is the book, Global Lessons for High-Caliber, Low-Cost Education. James Tooley is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor, and James Tooley, the author of the new book, Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High-Caliber, Low-Cost Education. The earlier book is Beautiful Tree, James published more than a decade ago now. The Beautiful Tree, a personal journey into how the world's poorest people are educating themselves. But James, as he's explaining to us, is still discovering these schools in faraway places, but coming to America, coming to Britain. Is that possible as well? Is it necessary to be extremely poor and isolated in order to form a school of your own? And James, you ask questions about there are reasons for people being alienated from public school systems paid for by the state. And you ask questions of people who are about to form a public school if on their own, a private school on their own. And I want to go through the list of 7 for you to explain to people listening right now how they might think about this. First, scalability. What does that mean, James?
We can think of this in terms of development often. This is scalability and sustainability. These are often the sort of the holy grails of development. If something isn't scalable, then how can it reach many? You can reach one or two, you know, small number of poor people, but you can't reach many. In the context of coming to America or coming to England, here you've got the same issue. If we really want to make a difference and we believe that something we're working with can really make a difference, then we want it to be scalable. We don't just want one, you know, I've created a low-cost school in the northeast of England, one of the poorer parts of England. I've created one there, but no one's going to be impressed by just one little school on its own. We've got to create more schools. I want more people to come in and, you know, do the same thing that I've been doing. We can create smaller chains of these schools, networks of these schools. Once we've got scalability, then we know this is a solution that can work not just for a couple of kids, but for the many, possibly for all.
Afford, that's obvious, the affordability and the quality. Those things come together, of course, because people are thinking about the value for their money. How do they work for people coming to low-cost, thinking about low-cost schooling?
So the affordability, again, this, if we think about that in developing countries, I've done a lot of research showing that the low-cost private schools, not surprisingly, these schools that we find in the slums of, as you said, Monrovia and other parts of the world, these schools are affordable to parents on the poverty line. So this is really important. The parents on the poverty line, they don't have to spend more than 10% of their income on school fees for all of their children. And there is a school for them at the price they can afford. Now, coming to England and America, what are the figures we can use? Well, in England, and I think you have the same there in America, you have something called disposable income, but also discretionary income. So disposable income is the income that anyone can spend on a wide variety of things, food and clothing. So, and discretionary is that bit that's left over for treats, for holidays, for, you know, exceptional items. And what I've shown is that the school fees we charged up north in this little school I just mentioned in passing would be affordable by the second lowest quintile in terms of discretionary income. So not the poorest, but the second lowest. That's an achievement. That's an advance, because private schools at the moment are only affordable by the top quintile and probably the top decile within that. So that's very important. So when we're trying to think about this as an alternative movement, this is what perhaps we're getting at. Affordability is so important. And ideally, we want to see prices go down so that the lowest quintile can afford them.
Yes, the number I've written down here is you asked the parents who are interested in this, and they said £50 a week. Is that out of date now? I mean, inflation and the pandemic and all, or is that the number that you still can use, James?
Yeah, so it was actually, was it 50 or 52 pounds? Anyway, we went in at £52 a week, and we're up to about £60 a week.
Now. Okay.
So, you know, it's not a million miles away. And that's important what you said about there about per week, because, you know, too often people think about school fees as being, okay, this is what we spend per year or per term, don't they, or per semester. And yet my experience in developing countries was often schools had daily fees. Those cash flow of the poor is daily or weekly fees and so on. And I just prefer, I thought it was probably easier for people to think about the cost of schools if they were thinking about them in terms of, you know, what you can afford weekly rather than this bigger figure that would come out semester or term-wise.
All right.
So, yeah.
More concerns. Value and equity. How do you describe those, James?
So value for money. Now, this again, in the developing country research where we look at there, we compare government schools, what do you, American school, public schools, with the private schools. And there, I was just very, you can do calculations where, okay, this is the achievement on standardized tests or special tests that we've given the children in both public and private. This is the achievement, and this is the cost of the schooling. Now, in the private schools, that cost is borne by parents. In the government schools, it's borne by the state, or, you know, maybe some combination of state and parents. But nonetheless, typically we see that per achievement point, per achievement in mathematics and English, the private schools are much better value for money than the government schools. So that's there. And equity, obviously private schools have got to be fair. If they're going to be part of any development solution or any solution to education in America or England, then they've got to be fair. They've got to be fair to girls. You know, people, there's this myth about private schools in places like we've been talking about, Liberia, Sierra Leone, that they're unfair to girls. It's not true. But of course, we have to make sure that's not true in order to justify promoting these schools.
And choice, what is the choice offered to parents because they're making the decision about committing their resources? What is attractive to them? I'm guessing that matters continent to continent, but you have some fundamentals that you convey, and I wrote them down quickly: knowledge, skills, disposition, and values. All things that come from the family, but do they also come from these schools? Are those questions asked, James?
They are asked. And I think the important thing to recall about choice is that these private schools, parents are going into them with their eyes open. So a lot of our critics, a lot of my critics, you know, once I started publicizing this work, talking about it to great people like yourself, people would say, no, parents are being forced into these schools, or they're being hoodwinked. You know, they want to go to private school, they're poor. Who wouldn't want to go to private school? So they just go along to something that's totally inadequate. They like the uniforms or whatever. And my work has shown, no, they go into these schools with their eyes open. They see the knowledge that's being brought into these schools is better. And we've proven that. The dispositions, the character, all these things are improved within these schools. And they are, so they go into their eyes open, and they're able to list the things that are better in the government schools and better in the private schools. Which occur more frequently in the government schools and occur more frequently in the private schools. In the private schools, it's things like closer attention to the children, safe place for girls, you know, aspirational. What's more frequent in the government schools? Teachers are on strike. Teachers don't turn up. Classes are crowded. So parents understand what they're talking about, what their choices they're making. They're not blind.
And finally, sustainability. You mentioned that already. Does that mean you have a pool of children and there are children that are going to come for years? Do you think about the teachers? Do you think about the administrators, the resources? How to imagine this for somebody thinking about it now, James?
Well, so thinking about starting a school here, you know, if that's what we're trying, if that's where we're going now. So if someone wanted to start a low-cost school in America, you've got to make sure it's sustainable. You might be able to get, you know, maybe someone will give you a grant or a donation, or family members will help you out in order to set up the school. But this has got to be able to last. It's got to be able to stand on its own 2 feet. It can't be forever subsidized from outside. So the sustainability is important. The costs of the schools must match or be less than the fee income you can get from parents. That's what I mean by sustainability. We're not talking about charity here, incidentally. We're talking about small businesses that are better serving low-income families in the developing world than public alternative, and I reckon you can do similar things here.
I recall an anecdote as you used the word charity. Weren't you chastised by someone once? And he said, "We don't want your charity." Didn't you hear that, James?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of my first days when I went into these low-cost private schools in Hyderabad in India, and, you know, sitting there just totally in awe at what I was seeing. You know, it's probably the fifth private school I'd visited. I was so impressed. And this poor Muslim mother came in, you know, in her hijab, and she owed money for the her school fees for her child. And of course, there's a foreigner there, and the school fees are so low. You get out a wadge of rupees from your pocket and say, "Oh, you take it and fund your child." And absolutely, no, I don't want your charity. What I'm value in this school is the school is accountable to me. I'm sort of paraphrasing now, of course, but the school is accountable to me, and therefore I'm going to be spending my money. I don't want foreigners coming in and helping. Very profound lesson, really.
The book is Really Good Schools, Global Lessons for High Caliber, Low Cost Education. James Tooley is the author. We're going to America with James. The recommendations for really good schools continue from John Summer, Knight Distinguished Professor Emeritus, University of North Carolina at Charlotte. In Really Good Schools, James Tooley presents a compelling argument for education in contradistinction to schooling, a difference seemingly lost in the bureaucracies of public education. He identifies the possibilities and promise of private education as a ground-up, spontaneously ordered enterprise that can serve even the lowest income individuals more effectively than can the administrative state. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Lowe's knows that more projects mean more tools. For a limited time, new and existing MyLowe's Rewards credit card members can get 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more, in-store and online. Don't wait to get the things you need. Get special financing today. Lowe's. We help. You save. Now through August 27th, choose 12-month special financing on purchases of $299 or more. Offer subject to credit approval and cannot be combined. Minimum monthly payments required. See store or Lowe's.com for details.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.